The Agriculture and Natural Resources Appropriations Subcommittee will now come to order. Members, please note that Vice Chair Bell is excused, has an excused absence. She will not be here today. Will the Administrative Assistant Kiva please call the roll?
Chair Altman?
Here.
Vice Chair Bell is excused. Ranking Member Chambliss?
Here.
Representatives Abbott?
Here.
Black?
Here.
Botana?
Here.
Buchanan? Cassell?
Here.
Cross?
Here.
Gossett Seidman?
Here.
Hart?
Here.
Killebrew?
Yes, ma'am.
Lopez?
Here.
Overdorf? Trunau? Quorum is present, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Kiva. Quorum being present, I would like to welcome everyone to the Agriculture and Natural Resources Appropriations Subcommittee. Make sure cell phones are either on silent or turned off. Any member of the public wishing to address the subcommittee will please fill out an appearance form and give it to the committee administrative assistant. And then we'll know that you're interested in addressing the subcommittee. It is great to be back. I would like to welcome everyone back. And wow, couldn't pick a more beautiful week to be here. So it's really exciting time to get back in business. I would like to talk a little bit about, before we begin, I'd like to take a minute to share some, I think, useful information as we move forward about our present situation. On a statewide basis, agencies are asking for over $5.8 billion of additional general revenue spending and $22.8 billion in additional trust fund spending over our base budget. Within our subcommittees, the four agencies under our jurisdiction are requesting an additional $837 million from the general revenue fund, as well as $3.3 billion from trust funds. As we listen to these presentations, I want to remind you about the long-range financial outlook that was issued earlier this fall by the Legislative Budget Commission. That outlook focused primarily on the General Revenue Fund, and it showed that our state budget is in good shape, with positive ending balances projected for the next 3 years. Despite the good news, though, the outlook also revealed that the projected expenditures are beginning to outpace revenues, particularly in the recurring spending silo. And, of course, the recurring spending is the one that we most closely watch. So that means, members, that we need to be cautious as we develop next year's budget, and we need to be mindful of the out-year impacts of our spending decisions. With that said, we have a full agenda today. Please hold all questions until the presenter has finished their presentation. I'll recognize you at the appropriate time. If we run short on time, presentations not heard today will roll to the next subcommittee meeting. Of course, we hope that doesn't happen. It'd be great if we could get an overview from each agency today and not have to do that. So, unless there are questions, let's go ahead and move to presentations. And our first presentation for the fiscal 24-25 agency liaison budget request is Commissioner Wilton Simpson, Department of Agriculture and Consumer Services.
Good morning. My staff did a tremendous job preparing all these notes that I have in front of me, so hopefully I'll get some of them right. And my goal is to get finished very quickly so we maintain our schedule. But first of all, I'd like to say that when you think about your Department of Agriculture, we are less, in our core mission, we're less than a half of 1% of the state budget. So clearly we're way underfunded. Let's just start with that. secondly, I'd like to say, thank you. Last year we had a great year. Our teammates in the Department of Agriculture had a great year with the pay raises. They were very grateful, and it could not have happened, obviously, without the legislature, so we really appreciate the work that y'all did there on behalf of our employees and teammates. I'll talk about several areas of the budget, and I believe there will be questions, so I'll try to be brief on these issues. Hurricane Idalia did about $500 million worth of damage to our crops and farmers in that area. This morning, I heard a phrase that it's going to stick with me now about, you know, when Ian hit in the Fort Myers area, it wiped out a couple of bridges, and the state very quickly spent a considerable sum of money repairing those bridges. Our bridges on Idalia were called barns and center pivots and aquaculture and other types of property damages, fences and things of that nature. And that's where we're going to be coming back, I hope, a little later this year with a program maybe to really help those impacted areas with those farmers with the help of the legislature. So we're going to bring that back to you. As it relates to the hurricane area, we're asking for $4 million for reforestation. And that those monies are spent to get the land prepped and ready to do that reforestation. We're looking to do more of cost share funding in that area. If farmers move to BMPs, we have a cost share pot of money today. We've increased that in the affected county areas affected by Idalia from $50,000 per farmer to $150,000. We're going to be looking for some additional resources to be able to continue to do those cost-sharing programs, and not only in that area, but all across the state as we move our farmers to BMPs. When you look at our water projects this year, our regional water projects, we want $15 million on the BMAP-focused cost-share programs, which is where we're encouraging using BMPs to have better irrigation system, better fertilization systems, and things of that nature to help your local farming community continue to comply with our BMPs, and not only comply, but to sign up for those BMPs. And we're also going to ask for, again, this year, $300 million for the Rural and Family Lands program. It's a great program. We are, as Senate President 2 years ago, I put $300 million in the budget. I believe we have about $100 million of those dollars left. Clearly, that money will be spent by before July the 1st. But I believe it'll be spent by January or February at the latest. So we will have no funding for at least 4 months there. The good news on that program is that we reopened it this year. We have almost $2 billion in opportunities to buy additional development rights. And if you'll remember what's different about this program versus a fee simple program, if you buy the fee simple program, and I believe last year this legislature did that with about $800 million, and some farmers, by the way, don't want to have you just buy their development rights. They will actually want to sell their property, and then those properties were leased back. Well, when those leases run out, those lands have got to be managed by somebody, right? And we're going to come back to this body to do that, those management practices and things of that nature. If we wanted to really expand our program, the properties that we bought under Fee Simple last year should be, the development rights should be removed and immediately put back on the market for surplusing. Back into those hands, that would generate hundreds of millions of dollars in revenue to go right back into the program to conserve more land and development rights. And if you'll remember, last year I said this a lot, but when you think about rural and family lands, the landowner still owns their land when we're finished buying those development rights. They're responsible using BMPs for taking care of that land. That land also stays on your local tax rolls. And they're obligated to take care of those lands, not state taxpayers. And so it gives us a lot more bang for our buck to do it through the rural and family lands and to make sure that we are stretching our taxpayer dollar as far as it can go. You heard Chair Altman say, you know, the outlook is not as good on recurring dollars. And so this is a place to where when we've got a lot of fee simple purchases in the state, and we do, a lot of the state, we can look and see where it's appropriate in those other properties. How do we remove those development rights and get that surplus so that we can then take that additional dollars and continue the program? I think that's something that's very important. And again, it was last year's $800 million, I believe, was mostly fee simple, and every bit of that could be surplus in the next 2 or 3 years. Those dollars generated, so if you spend $800 million on fee simple, you would have probably spent about $300 million, maybe $350 million on buying development rights. So you should presume that you would get about $400 to $500 million back if you were now to flip this back into private hands. And of course it would go on the tax roll and all the benefits that I mentioned. We wouldn't have to take care of that land in the future. We wouldn't need additional resources. We're looking this year to continue to support our frontline responders. We have been very pleased with Colonel Adams. He started with us this January. He's doing a great job. We've had many successes with Colonel Adams. this year. And I'm going to mention a few, and this is not just the Colonel Adams and his team, but also our Consumer Services Division. But we did what we called Operation Candy Crush, where we removed probably over 100,000 packages that looked like, candies, right? Skittles, gummy bears, and things like that. Thank you to the legislature for passing that legislation last year. But we've done that work, and we're continuing to do that. We've had fuel thefts, four major busts of fuel thefts. That is, we know that there are, $8 to $10 million a month being stolen of fuel. As we continue to break up these rings, and thank you again, last year you gave us the ability to do that with the Pulsar technologies and things of that nature. So with your help, we've been able to make those busts. And of course, that's being advertised. We're doing that all the time, working with local law enforcement. We have found, I believe, over 150 semi-trailers that were stolen now at our intercept stations because of the training that Colonel Adams is bringing to our teams. THCO, we've discovered 6 tons of that in the last few months that we've had to destroy. And when you think about this, we need to now ramp up our support system for those systems. You'll see money included in our budget. This year was about $12 million as part of that support, not only for that team, but our canine program. So as people come in the state, we can properly vet them and make sure that they're not bringing these illegal drugs or stolen equipment or other hazards into our state. We've got a great team there, and they're doing a really good job. When you think about our craft program and our citrus program, this year, for the first in many, we're projected to produce more citrus than the previous year. So I believe last year was the low water mark of about 15 million boxes. I believe that's being increased now to this year. The projection is going to be 20 million plus boxes. And that sounds great, except we should be producing 4 or 5 times that, 10 times that. And so when you think about our citrus program last year, this legislature was very helpful. I think a total of around $68 million were put in various programs to help our citrus industry recover. We're asking this year for an additional $24 million to continue our craft program, where we're helping with the replanting. I believe there's going to be additional support for additional tree planting. There are many things that we're doing now that appear to be working. Some of the injections into the root systems and other things appear to be extending the life of our trees and bringing our trees back. They're greening up, greening in a good way, not greening in a dead way. But they are the fruit's bigger, we're having less fruit drop. What we don't know yet, and we won't know for a few years, is will this be better in year 2, in year 4, in year 6? The rootstocks, the research that this legislature has been funding now for more than a decade, I believe at $8 million a year, is critical to the continued research that we need to bring back our citrus industry. And we're hopeful because now we're seeing signs of things that are actually working in our citrus program. So we're very hopeful there. We do need some additional support. And clearly, this legislature has been very generous, and we appreciate that. When you look at our offices and modernizing your Department of Agriculture, we have nine facilities that are either leased or obsolete. And some of the buildings that we own right downtown, we should not have employees in them today. They are riddled with many, many problems. And they were built, in some cases, I believe, in the 1930s and 40s, and very poorly maintained. And we could spend tens of millions of dollars on those buildings, and you would still have poorly maintained facilities that your Department of Agriculture is working out of. One of our missions, and thank you for last year's funding, the $31 million that we received, we're putting our new building complex together at Connor, which will house, I believe, 9 of our current facilities. We've done the math over the course of the next 30 years. It'll save the state of Florida over $50 million to do this consolidation, surplus the properties that we need to surplus and get out of the tax system, and also obviously stop leasing these projects. That was $177 million to be able to complete that building, non-recurring dollars. And then we want to streamline and modernize the Consumer Services Division and our other divisions within this system. We're going to a Microsoft-based system. This 8.5 million you see in this, or the 11 million is part of that. And what we're doing is we're making sure that all of our divisions are going to be on the same system. Did you hear what I just said? All of ours will be on the same system. They'll be able to talk to each other. We'll be able to better serve our consumers in this state because we'll have readily available information. It's all cloud-based, so we'll be able to have a state-of-the-art system. Clearly, that comes with a lot of security within those programs. And those are our primary asks. There are many others, but those are probably the primary asks that we're looking for this year, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, very good. Any questions? Do we have any questions in the committee? Representative Kilbrew.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, sir, for your report. Is there anything in the works for, I mean, I'm old enough to remember I-4 to Claremont, nothing but trees and no red lights. So, and I don't think I'll ever see that again, but do y'all have anything in your works for alternative crops for some of these people who are looking at an alternative crop rather than going back to citrus for whatever reason?
Mr. Chairman, so that great question. And the University of Florida and IFAS does a tremendous job of bringing new crops available to our farmers all the time. We've had a tremendous number of blueberries, peaches. We have over 300 commodities in this state. And so we're always looking for, and as a farmer and as someone old enough to remember what you're talking about, we're always looking to bring new opportunities to our community. The pressure that we're under in the state of Florida really is the cost of our land and the value and the 1,000 net in migration a day into the state of Florida. And I think when you think about what are future opportunities, if you don't start with that rural and family lands program, if the legislature, and this is going to give us $2 billion this year's budget, it would all be spent before the following July of 25. And so when you think about what is farming of the future going to look like and are we going to have farmland available and that wildlife corridor that we've all talked about and the ideal of an aquifer recharge area, the rural and family lands is the key to having success there. And so if we don't do the rural and family lands in a robust way, then it won't matter what crop. The last crop we plant are normally houses. And that's what's happening, and you know, along with those red lights and everything else. So the absolute key to your question is rural and family lands, and then we need to continue to fund our IFAS programs and our research programs there at the University of Florida and FAMU to make sure that we are on the cutting edge in Florida. The only way farmers succeed in Florida is by being much more efficient than our counterparts, right? And we can't beat other countries, right? They have a lesser infrastructure cost than we do. But we should be able to compete with all other states in this nation. And rural and family lands, and then the regulatory structure of BMPs and things of that nature, regionalizing our water projects. You know, as we go after one farmer at a time, how stressful and how it's the last mile. It's the last thimbleful of nutrient load on the farm. You can't get to that without an extreme cost. If you regionalize these projects and to take up that nutrient load, it's much more cheaper and much more efficient use of our dollars as taxpayers. And so I think that's a long answer to a good question. Yes, sir.
Representative Overdorf.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a question on kind of preventative, if you will, after the hurricane, looking at pine borer beetle and silviculture side, wondering if by any chance your team has looked at anything from pheromone treatments, different stuff like that, as far as keeping the pine borer beetle away and how your team might be able to help out with that in the preventative side.
Thank you. Great question. We do. We have a forestry team within the department. We have 17 divisions, by the way, so any question, we're going to have a division for it. In this case, our forestry department is constantly looking at what we've had, and we've had another tragedy with the Georgia Pacific plant closing. And that's a real tragedy to our forests. But during a hurricane, just like Idalia, just like Ian, you have a lot of forest damage that's going to have to be removed to prevent some of the things because they're more vulnerable, right? You had a lot of bark removal, you had trees twisting, you have a lot of vulnerabilities for those type of products. The best thing that we can do is fund the operations properly. And we've been working with our federal partners to try to get the resources to come in here and get a lot of that dead wood, what we would call all the dead wood that's going to be, it's on the ground today, it's fuel for tomorrow. And so to prevent forest fires, to prevent beetles, to prevent things coming in, the best thing we need to do is reforest what we, the dollars we're looking at here of reforestation. We need to make sure that we're getting rid of all of that dead material. And not only just for the sake of not attracting pests and pests, you know, various pests, but to make sure that we don't have a major fire as they've had recently in out west and in Canada. And, you know, Hurricane Michael, go back 5 years ago, 30 to 40% of that material is still on the ground. You could have a major fire in North Florida. Now, this legislature has been very generous with equipment, but I'd rather not have to use it all at one time, right? And so we really need to make sure that we are properly funding our Forest Division. And some of the requests you see here on equipment goes a long ways to helping us get that material cleaned up, makes us less vulnerable to those type of intrusions.
Ranking Member Chambliss.
And again, thank you for the presentation. You mentioned the prosecution of fuel thefts.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's something that I hear a lot of down in my neck of the woods. So I was wondering, are there any other tools that we maybe need to give law enforcement to help in the prosecution and, you know, identifying of these fuel theft rings?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yes, so that's a great question. And part of our ask this year, the part of, I believe it was $12 million for support staff. So our team is doing a great job, but we need now the support staff to do all of the paperwork and to be able to do the proper procedures and filings of those paperwork. So a lot of the staffing, about half of those FTE are specifically to be supportive in those operations. And what happens is our law enforcement division is doing a great job working, and again, working with the local law enforcement. But we are, where we have a little bit of bottleneck now is the processing of all of the paperwork that is required to document and process these facilities. So with these additional resources, this is certainly going to continue our mission in a much more succinct way.
Representative Cassell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Commissioner, for your presentation. I was happy to see you mention the hemp bill, obviously. We passed some great legislation last session that dealt with putting some new regulations in place that your office was responsible for instituting. So I'm just curious, having carried out Candy Crush, that operation, do you find that you have the resources that you need to really implement those regulations that we passed last session? Do you need anything else from us to carry that out?
Mr. Chairman. Yes, thank you. And we have our consumer services division has done a great job under Dr. Curran, and they're doing a tremendous job. And we have so far brought a lot of transparency to these processes. One of the things that we needed, and we may ask for additional support this year, is to make sure that we can pay our frontline employees a wage to where that we don't have such a large turnover. So when we have trained employees, trained team members, it is much easier to carry out these missions. And we have a lot of our frontline inspectors still well below $20 an hour. Well below $20 an hour. So we're, you know, some additional resources and making sure that we can retain our employees is probably the biggest phase. In those areas, we don't see a need to expand our footprint at this time. Our main emphasis would be able to continue to retain. And so by retaining, of course, we're retaining that experience. And our consumer service division works very well with our law enforcement division on these types of raids and products. And so this first round was educational, right, for the store owners. What I don't know, and I have not researched it, but this year we may come back to the legislature and see if we go back again and it's there again, if the penalties are strict enough, right? And that's clearly what we're going to be looking for. And that may be the tweak that we need to make sure if we have to go back a second time that we have more law enforcement tools in the tool bag.
Representative Cross.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Commissioner. I wanted to ask about Senate Bill 1000 from 2022. This was the nutrient application rate bill that was looking to address some of the losses in the citrus industry by using site-specific nutrient management. Was wondering if there's anything in the budget that the department is requesting this year to kind of track implementation of that, see if putting additional nutrients in some of the citrus crops, if that's having a beneficial impact on the crops. And while this was not part of the bill, if there'll be any additional water quality monitoring to make sure that there's not impacts to receiving water bodies.
Sure. Yes, so thank you. That great question. The University of Florida and IFAS, as we update our BMPs, is doing a lot of that, the studies. I looked at a report this morning. I believe we're going to have a lot of our BMP manuals updated, reflecting some of that technology by the end of this year, even the next few months. We're always, in the farming industry, interested in better BMPs. Where you're going to get worn out with this year is AI, right? Artificial intelligence. And we've been using artificial intelligence in this world for many, many years, and in agriculture for many, many years. And what you're seeing is some of the progress that we're making from a technique of less nutrient load coming off the farm, less water being used in the crops. And remember that some of our crops, using BMPs, we're reducing water demand by 40 to 80%. If you go back 30 years ago in this state, agriculture was the number one user of water. Today it's population. And of course we've reversed. We've reduced our water demand and population has grown. And so we're going to continue to work with the University of Florida and IFAS to continue to update those manuals, but also making sure that we're using current data and science, because sometimes it comes out different than you would think. You would think, well, this farm has got a nutrient product coming off of that farm. And then we can, what I believe in, it was the last mile for Amazon, right? We can get it to the warehouse, but how do we use the last mile to get to the house? Well, in nutrients, it's the same way. You can get it down to the last mile, and can you go to get it to zero or get it to something more desirable? And that last mile is the most expensive portion of it. What we're asking for this year to help with that is to not only continue to update BMPs and work with the university system to continue that process for agriculture, but to give us the resources to do regional projects so that we're not taking nutrients just off that farm. We're taking nutrients off the roadways. You know, you've seen how many millions of gallons have been spilled by municipalities. And think about this, and I haven't never done this, as somebody in this room is going to do this after I say these words. But when you have a million gallons of raw sewage spilled into one of our waterways, I'll bet every farm in this state doesn't do that on a 6-month basis, right? The damage to our ecosystem. And we need to get after that last mile, I believe, on a regional basis, because as the ecosystem around our agricultural facilities go, much more nutrient load is coming from septic tanks, roads, stormwater areas, and things of that nature. And we should focus as department on our BMPs and doing our part. And as a state, we should be focused like a laser on those regional projects, like the C-43 and 44 were in that region, right, for the Coosatchee and the St. Lucie. We need to focus on more of those in regional areas to absorb that nutrient. And I believe the combination of doing both of those things would solve more problems than sometimes the way we go at it today.
Representative Hart, did you have a question?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Commissioner. I did not, and maybe I missed it, did you speak at all about defending the Second Amendment rights with the items that I see bulleted here?
Sure. I did not mention those, but those are very important bullets. So today in the state of Florida, we have several careers and professionals that cannot conceal carry. And like tow truck operators, I believe, and if you're a repossession business, you can't conceal carry. I don't think the state of Florida should be in the business of telling people who can conceal carry in that type of a fashion. They've been targeted. So we're going to ask the legislature this year to get rid of those type of rules so that if you're in whatever businesses, if you're allowed to conceal carry, you should be able to exercise your constitutional right. And, of course, now you don't even have to get a concealed carry card to do so. And so these are laws that were on the books many decades, I believe. Certainly wasn't something done in the last 10 years. And so we're looking to sort of level the playing field in that area.
Okay. Any other questions? Thank you so much, Commissioner, for the excellent presentation, as usual. And
thank you.
Look forward to working with you and your staff in the upcoming year.
Well, I think our staff's here. Some of our staff, Izzy and Alex, will be bugging all of you in the near future.
Okay, good.
Thank you, guys. Thank you, Chair.
All right, our next presentation will be from Sean Hamilton, Secretary of the Department of Environmental Protection.
Hey, good morning. Let's see if we can cue this up. I'm trying to start the presentation here. Does anybody know quickly how to start it in presentation mode, full screen? Perfect, thank you. All right, good morning, Chair, thank you. Again, I'm Sean Hamilton, Secretary with the Department of Environmental Protection, DEP State lead agency on environmental protection as it relates to the stewardship of our air, water, and land resources. So in recent years, Governor DeSantis and the support and the leadership of the legislature have dedicated unprecedented levels of funding to the protection and restoration of our natural resources. The team at DEP is making great strides in advancing key regulatory programs and initiatives, as well as spearheading strategic investments to protect and restore Florida's environment. I appreciate the opportunity to be here today present DEP's FY24-25 legislative budget requests so we can continue our historic momentum in the next fiscal year. So during Governor DeSantis' first term, as you'll recall, he set an ambitious goal of $2.5 billion for the protection of water resources and Everglade restorations in the state. And obviously, as in supported by the legislature and your leadership, we surpassed that goal to the tune of $3.3 billion focused on those particular efforts in that first 4 years. Now, in Executive Order 2306, aptly termed achieving even more now for Florida's environment, we seek to surpass that by calling for $3.5 billion over the next 4 years for Everglades restoration and water quality initiatives. You know, after the success of this past legislative session, we're already well underway. So in fulfilling this commitment, our agency budget request includes $1.2 million for Everglades restoration and protection of water resources, $206 million for resilience and coastal protection, $175 million for prized properties, and $211 million for our cleanup programs. So just to talk a little bit more detail. So over the past few years, the state has committed nearly $5 billion since 2019 toward water quality protection and Everglades restoration. We're seeing the benefits of those investments, and I think most of you have heard this. You know, we've seen amazing progress in the Everglades, with 55 of those projects either breaking ground or achieving major milestones. And you're seeing the ecological benefits of that down in Florida Bay, where you're seeing it reach salinity goals for the first time in decades, candidly. And so with that, $1.2 billion is included in our FY24-25 budget request, which will allow us to continue to expedite the Everglades restoration that I've talked about, again, using sound science and project collaboration, implement clean water projects, addressing our springs protection, improve infrastructure, and reduce the nutrients in our waterways, utilize our grant programs to assist communities with water supply and septic tank projects, and of course, advance alternative water supply projects to meet Florida's future water needs. And last but not least, definitely combat blue-green algae and red tide that have harmful environmental and economic impacts on our communities. So specifically, our budget request, as you can see, is asking for $740.5 million for Everglades restoration projects. And just a little bit, I'll break a few of those projects out for you. $550 million for a comprehensive Everglades restoration plan, which is after its term SERP. $64 million for the Everglades Agriculture Area Reservoir Project to clean and restore, to store excess water from Lake Okeechobee. And $76.5 million for the Northern Everglades and Estuaries Protection Program, or NEEP, to support projects designed to store and treat runoff to remove nutrients to promote ecological improvements in Lake Okeechobee, the Coosa Hatchie Estuary, and the St. Lucie Estuary. Also see $305 million for targeted water quality improvements, including $135 million for the Water Quality Improvement Grant Program, which expands the former wastewater grant program from years past. Now this program includes additional components to allow us to look at repairs to wastewater infrastructure, stormwater as a source of nutrient. Also addressing areas that's something you heard from the commissioner, looking at agricultural regional projects as an area of an opportunity, but also looking at additional areas of the state. Instead of just focus on the areas that where we have management action plans, looking at areas that are impaired and being able to focus on those prior to those plans. So being able to attack those areas sooner rather than later. You're going to see $50 million to accelerate projects in for scientific nutrient reduction. Those are a little bit more laser focused in our TMDL program. You'll see $20 million for critical infrastructure, including wastewater and stormwater projects that are targeted specifically for water quality and coral resources in Biscayne Bay. You'll see $100 million for water quality improvement projects in the Indian River Lagoon. And as you'll recall, last year, under House Bill 1379, we created the Indian River Lagoon Protection Program. And again, this funding will continue to support those efforts to improve the water quality and expedite the implementation of those existing plans, but also definitely speed up and aid the recovery of that area. Then you'll see $50 million to restore Florida's world-renowned springs. Again, a continued and much-needed investment. You'll also see $80 million for alternative water supply, a grant program at the department that helps communities plan for and implement vital conservation, reuse, and other alternative water supplies. And again, this funding is critical. It will help support Florida's future by ensuring adequate water supplies with a focus on key regional projects throughout those areas like you hear about the Central Florida Water Initiative area, Southern Water Use Caution Area, and the North Florida Regional Water Supply Partnership. Again, areas that have limitations that need to be addressed timely and quickly. You'll see $50.8 million to address blue-green algae and red tide, including $10.8 million to support water quality enhancements, including support for the blue-green algae task force. You'll see $10 million for innovative technologies to evaluate new opportunities to combat harmful algal blooms. You'll see $10 million to assist community governments to respond, responding to those blooms and things that they cause locally in the event of blooms and our red tide events. And you'll also see $20 million to combat harmful algal blooms in Lake Okeechobee specifically. All right, so not only are we making great investments, obviously, in our water quality efforts, we're also making great strides in our efforts to make sure our Florida communities are more resilient. In addition to championing the creation of the Resilient Florida program, the governor also created the Office of Resilience and Coastal Protection at DEP. And again, with the main focus of to provide funding, technical assistance, and coordination among state, regional, and local entities, and created the state's first chief resiliency officer position to coordinate the state's resilience efforts. Thanks to the support of the legislature, Florida is one of the most proactive states in the nation in addressing the resilience of our coastal and inland communities, ensuring that they are prepared for the adverse impacts of flooding and storm surge. So since 2019, more than $1.4 billion has been appropriated for projects to support sea level rise planning efforts at the local level, the development of a statewide data set and vulnerability assessments, grants for adaptation projects to address risk of flooding and sea level rise to coastal and inland communities to strengthen their critical infrastructure, and lastly, technical support for communities through regional partnerships. As a result of these efforts, all 67 counties in just a short life cycle of this program will have completed vulnerability assessments, identifying their vulnerabilities. Counties can now implement the right projects and initiatives to make our communities more resilient. To continue this progress, DEP is requesting $206 million for resilience and coastal protection, including $156 million for resilience, which includes $56 million for planning and coral reef protection, and then $100 million for the implementation of those state resilience projects throughout the state. We're also asking for $50 million in beach nourishment funding to continue addressing Florida's critically eroded shorelines. And then land conservation is central to our agency's priorities, and the Florida Forever Program serves as the blueprint for how the state conserves our natural resources and candidly how the nation should consider the same conservation efforts. Since 2019, Florida has committed more than $2.5 billion to the Florida Forever Program. This consistent funding has enabled DEP to acquire nearly 175,000 acres for conservation. 97% of which is in the wildlife corridor. We're fortunate that this legislature also recognizes the importance of land conservation efforts in the state and passed legislation last year dedicating $100 million annually to enable the department to be able to continue conserving environmentally sensitive lands. And again, it's important to note, by acquiring more conservation lands, especially those contiguous lands, it's increasing the volumes of water capable of being filtered naturally, recharging our aquifers, also increasing the habitat for wildlife, and then increasing opportunities for outdoor recreation like state parks, forests, and wildlife management areas that we all enjoy. Speaking of which, Florida has 175 state parks, trails, and historical sites that span nearly 800,000 acres and 100 miles of sandy beaches. We're the only four-time winner gold medal for such services and as the nation's best park in the nation. And again, this past fiscal year, our state parks welcomed nearly 29 million visitors, generating over $83 million in revenue for our state, along with an estimated economic impact of $3.6 billion. And so to ensure we're able to continue expanding public access, enhancing visitor experience, increasing tourism, and improving the health of our environmental resources, our request includes $125 million for the Florida Forever Program, the state's premier conservation and recreation land acquisition program. And specifically, we want $100 million for the Division of State Lands to continue to acquire those natural lands interests, including fee and conservation easements. Also, $15 million for the Florida's Community Trust component of Florida Forever. Again, this particular program provides funding to local governments and eligible nonprofits to allow them to acquisition lands for purpose of community-based parks, open space greenways, and to further their local outdoor recreational and natural resource protection needs. And then $10 million for the Florida Recreation Development Assistance Program, or called FRDAP, but in short, which provides competitive recreational grants to local governments for the acquisition or development of land for public outdoor recreation. And then $50 million for state park infrastructure improvements and resource management, again, to ensure all of our visitors continue to have access to these private properties for generations to come. And then lastly, our cleanup programs. The prevention and cleanup of contamination by hazardous waste is one of the nation's principal concerns right now. But nowhere is that a greater importance in Florida, where our groundwater is the source of 90% of the state's drinking water. Our budget request includes $211 million for the cleanup of contaminated sites. This funding will allow DEP to continue its progress in assessing and remediating contaminated or potentially contaminated sites to ensure our communities are safe from the impacts of historical releases, sources of pollution that protect the environment and public health and safety. Specific investments include $200 million for the petroleum tanks cleanup program, $7 million for the dry cleaning solvent contaminated site program, cleanup program, and then, of course, $4 million for hazardous waste contaminated site cleanup. And with that, that's it. Again, I look forward to working with you as we continue to do more to protect our natural resources in the state. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you so much for the presentation. I have a couple questions. One is on the $7 million for the cleanup. Is that considered the brownfield? Is that money for brownfields that cities can apply for?
For the dry cleaning site? Uh-huh. No, ma'am, that's separate from brownfields. That's specifically related to, I'm sorry, Chair. That's specifically related to the historical releases at dry cleaner sites. And those sites are in a program specifically for that unique universe. Okay.
One more, Mr. Chair. Yes, so do we have money coming from the state for brownfields in the various cities?
Sure, thank you. Yes, we do. What we do have a brownfields program that associated, again, and we could give you some more detail on it, but particularly it sets up those tax incentives of opportunities for you to go through it programmatically. So there's a complete program for brownfield and the tax incentives that go with that. And so it is a part of our base budget, but we can get you more detail.
Thank you. I have one last question. As it relates to the $50 million that's in the Springs Restoration, I noticed that it's kind of been set at $50 million for a while, and I understand that we're falling behind. Is there a reason why we're not asking for more money for the Springs Restoration?
Sure. I think one of the things to keep in mind with that, if you look at it again, the source is the key with Springs Restoration or any of our restorations, identifying good projects that will lead to the restoration of those springs. And again, one of the things to keep in mind is this, those projects, what are the nature of those projects? Are they agricultural regional projects? Are they septic tank conversions? Are there specific, you know, regional projects associated with historical water uses? And so right now we have been able to put that $50 million to very strategic needs in the Springs. Again, it's, to me, what's that magic number for progress? And that'll always be the question. $50 million is allowing us to make the meaningful advancements. Would $75 make more? Yes. But can you effectively get the right projects within a budgetary cycle at any particular number? Because we want to, again, we want to make sure that we're asking for the right amount that we can tactically and strategically deploy.
This is my final question. Thank you very much for answering me. So are these funds, though, being used to combat blue-green algae that has been recommended by the task force? Because I do see we have blue-green algae dollars at the bottom as well.
So are you...
Go back.
Go back?
Yes, sir. Right there. For the Springs restoration, don't we have a task force that gave us some parameters on blue-green algae in our springs? And then I see we have a $50 million harmful algae bloom at the bottom.
Yes.
I was just wondering, were we using that $50 million to tackle what that task force wanted us to look at in our springs restoration?
Sure. So the just on the task force, just kind of their mission is broader too, right? It's statewide algae issues as it relates to what things we need to be looking at either scientifically, policy-wise, which would include not just springs, but all of our water bodies. And so if you think about them as being the science and policy to provide the recommendations that you saw in the Clean Water Act and subsequent legislation that benefit the state as a whole. So when I think about the task force's role, that was its main function. So we've got good policies on the book that this funding helps us to prioritize those projects. And so you would expect to see that Springs projects, you would expect to see that our targeted water quality improvement projects are representative of those priorities that came from the task force.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you for Secretary. I have two questions, if that's okay. First of all, related to the Florida Forever funding, I know that we are all really excited last year with HB 1379 that we have an annual allocation of $100 million, which is great. We know that historically, Florida Forever funding was around $300 million, and Commissioner Simpson used throughout the number of $2 billion that they would love to have for some of the easement projects. Understanding that Florida Forever can be used for fee simple acquisition as well as conservation easements, what's the reason for the department setting that request at $125 million rather than something higher?
Sure. It's similar to what we discussed, right? What can you effectively programmatically execute within the realm of a session, right? And that $100 million was, at the time, obviously representative of that discussion, right? And what's that good number? But also, obviously, being good stewards of policy. And keep in mind, as much we can, I don't want to focus on the number, but the number's good, but also the prevalence of consistent funding. We're already seeing the benefits of consistent funding. We're seeing our throughput just continue to ramp up. We're having conversations that we couldn't have before. You know, folks understand that, why talk to you when I know next year your budget will be zero or 10 or 20 or whatever? And not only that, we're seeing Board of Trustees agendas with budget acquisitions higher than some budget years. And again, if you think about that, we're approving projects at a BOT, you know, $141 million. We've had legislative budgets that have been, you know, minuscule compared to what we're approving at each cabinet session. Again, so I'm more focused on the consistent availability of funding than the number and being able to execute soundly and timely around that. And so that's why you'll see that number continuously throughout the process, and it's legislatively mandated at this time.
Thank you for that rationale. Wanted to talk about beach renourishment and something that some of our local counties are experiencing right now. Those that fall within the U.S. Army Corps, the Jacksonville District, is some discussions about the need for perpetual easements. And if the counties and the Corps cannot come to a favorable resolution, it may remove that federal match for some of the beach renourishment projects, which would put potentially the onus on those local counties to foot the entire bill. If that happens, would the department consider requesting additional money for the beach renourishment projects in this year's budget?
Yeah. Trust me, that is something, obviously, as you can imagine, we're following closely. And I kind of look at it a couple of sequence. A, first of all, we need to deploy every possible resource to our disposal to make sure that the federal government and the Corps honor the commitment and the programmatic expectation that goes with that program. And so we need to exhaust all those efforts to the extent we can, first and foremost. But even with that, what you're saying, we would expect conversations potentially if that hits a standstill, because we have coastlines and communities at present risk, right? And at some point in time, they may elect to seek alternative options for funding, i.e. state funding. And so obviously we're prepared for those discussions. We don't have a number, but we're definitely prepared to support our communities if that is the case and present that information to you as a whole.
Okay, I don't see any other questions. Thank you.
Thank you,
sir. For your time and for what you do.
Thank you.
Next presentation is Hunter Jones, Chief Financial Officer of Florida Fish and Wildlife.
Thank you, and good morning, or I guess it's afternoon now, Chair Altman, Ranking Member Chambliss, and members of the committee. It's a pleasure to address you all today on behalf of the Fish and Wildlife Conservation Commission, and I'm proud to present to you our legislative budget request for fiscal year 24-25. Before diving into some of the details associated with our LBR, I'd like to first give a brief overview of its composition, which should provide helpful context for the slides that follow. This slide illustrates the composition of our LBR in two different ways. The pie chart reflects amounts requested in state and federal trust fund budget compared with general revenue budget, with $118.2 million associated with state trust funds, $21.4 million associated with federal funds, and $50 million associated with general revenue. The illustration on the right side of the slide reflects the amount of our LBR request that is recurring and the amount that is non-recurring, which includes fixed capital outlay. The main takeaway from this slide is that of our total $189.6 million request, 89% is non-recurring. Additionally, because fund balances have been used predominantly to support agency operations, only 26% of our total request would be supported by general revenue funding. When developing our LBRs, we spend a lot of time reflecting on our mission, managing fish and wildlife resources for their long-term well-being and for the benefit of people, and contemplate its application given existing and emerging trends and conditions. Using this approach, we've identified and developed issues related to five core themes based on in-demand conservation needs. These themes are Go Outdoors Florida, the Florida Wildlife Corridor, resilience, public safety and resource protection, and operational support. In the next several slides, I will highlight notable funding issues from our LBR using each of these five main groupings. The first grouping of budget request issues I'd like to cover are those centered around our outdoors, Go Outdoors Florida theme. Within this theme, we've developed issues engineered towards preserving Florida's rich cultural heritage, enhancing and expanding access to programs like our Youth Conservation Centers Network, promoting investments and building the next generation who cares about fish and wildlife conservation, and improving public access to the outdoors through a variety of maintenance, repair, and construction projects on wildlife management areas and related facilities. Our Go Outdoors Florida theme accounts for $31.6 million in total budget and includes three full-time equivalent positions. In addition to getting folks outdoors, we've recognized the importance of land management on 56 wildlife management areas throughout the state. These collectively span over 1.5 million acres, most of which are within the wildlife corridor. These lands serve as important habitat for wildlife, including rare and imperiled species, and requests developed within this theme would provide for additional staffing and equipment critical for ongoing wildlife and habitat management. Also included within this grouping, our request for resources to support land acquisition and restoration activities. The Florida Wildlife Corridor theme accounts for $56 million in total budget and includes 4 full-time equivalent positions. FWC appreciates the importance of building upon adaptive strategies initiated by the governor and legislature through emphasis placed on Florida's resilience. Our resilience theme encompasses requests associated with restoration projects designed to address critical habitat needs, protect and enhance aquatic habitat, conserve fish and wildlife, and enhance resiliency of inland and coastal systems. Observing key links between stakeholder engagement, research, and effective management, issues include collaborative initiatives benefiting Florida fisheries. The resilience theme accounts for $37 million in total budget and includes 18 full-time equivalent positions. As the fishing capital of the world, with over 1 million registered boaters, over 8,000 miles of coastline, and over 34 million acres of land, our budget requests address increased calls for service through our public safety and resource protection theme. Within this theme, we also request budget to provide for the detection and mitigation of ongoing and emerging fish and wildlife diseases, such as chronic wasting disease. These initiatives would enable FWC to meet increases in demand for public assistance and would allow for full implementation of wildlife disease monitoring and response plans. The public safety and resource protection theme accounts for $52 million in total budget and includes 20 full-time equivalent positions. The last theme I'll cover relates to needs required to effectively and efficiently run the business. These needs span a variety of administrative support and service functions, including additional personnel, information technology initiatives, replacement of equipment, and repair and maintenance projects. The operational support theme accounts for $13 million in total budget and includes 9 full-time equivalent positions. In any conversation concerning budget, I'd be remiss if I didn't first highlight the fact that FWC makes it a priority to maximize available grant funding supported by federal and other grant programs when developing our LBR. Grant-funded issues, many of which I've covered in preceding slides, including funding for wildlife and oil spill restoration projects, boating access, and a variety of other needs. This slide's paid tribute to a few of our state and federal partners, each of whom play a valuable role in supporting FWC's mission. In this LBR, we are requesting budget to support over $67 million in available state and federal funding for projects which span a variety of fish and wildlife conservation efforts. Mr. Chair, that concludes my presentation on our fiscal year 24-25 LBR. And again, I'd like to thank you for the opportunity to address the committee. With that, I'd like to welcome any comments and would be happy to answer any questions concerning our presentation.
Well, Representative Overdorf.
Thank you very much for the presentation. One question I had, where in your presentation does it address the regulatory personnel and the staffing associated with regulatory?
That would include our administrative services and support personnel. That would be on slide 8.
Under operational support?
Yes, sir.
Okay, and that's 9 additional?
That is 9 additional, yes, sir.
Okay, great. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Representative Cross?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Mr. Jones, for your presentation. On the resilience slide, wondering if FWC has done anything to, if there's been any efforts to characterize or quantify the value of some of our coastal ecosystems in terms of the resilience benefits they offer or some of the economic benefits to our state.
Mr. Chair. Yes, ma'am. So we have a couple different issues that would address those concerns right there. One is our statewide oyster and habitat resiliency enhancement. I mean, that's something that's very important. This issue specifically includes a multifaceted response that includes our research and management arms of the agency. In addition to that, we're working hard on our coral reef restoration recovery with our partners in that effort. And so, we each play a very valuable role in each of these different things throughout our agency, and then, within the synergy with other agencies. And so those two issues I'd highlight among some others related to habitat restoration in a coastal and inland environment.
Just one follow-up. Thank you, Chair. Related to the coral reefs, has there been any assessment of the proportion of Florida's coral reefs that have been impacted from some of the extreme water temperatures we saw? You know, for instance, do we know the percentage of our reefs that have had some degree of bleaching?
Mr. Chair, specific to your question concerning percentages of reefs, we don't have that information right now. I'd be happy to go back and provide that for you. This is something that we're evaluating consistently and are monitoring on a very frequent basis. It's very important to us, and we're excited for the opportunity to expand that initiative.
I think we'll have some discussion about some of those impacts in ocean sea temperatures that we saw as we move on. So we should have some good information on that. It's a very good question. Okay, I think that's all the questions we have for Mr. Jones. Thank you so much. Appreciate FWC and what they do, and looking forward to working with you this session.
Likewise.
Our last presenter is Shannon Shepp, Executive Director, Department of Citrus.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Let's see if I can get back to the desktop here. Again, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good afternoon, members. It is my honor to be here to present the Florida Department of Citrus legislative budget request on behalf of the Florida Citrus Commission. This is our chairman, Chairman Steve Johnson, who has quite a business in caretaking citrus, cattle, very deep roots in agriculture, and serves very well in his capacity there. As you know, we're a state government entity that was funded in 1935. We are governed by an 11-member board. Our focus is regulatory research and marketing for Florida citrus, and we are governed under the Chapter 601 Florida statutes, the Florida Citrus Code. Our mission statement very intentionally doesn't just address the well-being of Florida citrus growers, but it also addresses the well-being of the state of Florida. There was a time when there was only oranges and trains here in Florida, and we want to continue that mission of being a good partner and a good steward of making sure we continue to be a strong economic driver for the state of Florida, even in the face of greening. Talked about earlier what we do, marketing and public relations, research. Generally, that research has been under health and wellness, or has been under economic and market research. You'll see in our previous budgets, last 2 years, we've dived a little bit more into the production research to help solve some of the greening, including with expedited propagation programs and kind of filling some gaps that might expedite new innovations that are in the pipeline, but needed a little help. Our legislative budget request this year is for a total of $32,284,000. You'll see that the Citrus Recovery Program does not have a request in there. It doesn't mean that we won't have one during the session, but we, in the interest of transparency, wanted to make sure what we bring to you is cutting edge and top of, you know, what's happening next. There's very quick things happening in the citrus industry right now with CRISPR and innovation and AI. The University of Florida is working very diligently to put together plant transformation lab that incorporates AI and some other biochemical sciences. So we are working together with them on some of those things in that area. You will probably see some funds requested in that area. The only budget issues that we have are requests. One has already been really fulfilled, and that was a budget transfer from one, our marketing area, over to our research department, just for the simple fact that we're getting back out in the field a little bit more. And then we've asked for $5 million in non-recurring funds for the continuation and expansion of our e-commerce and marketing programs. I think it was Henry Ford that said something about stopping spending money on advertising is like, you know, stopping your watch to save time. That we're in this position now because we have good news to share in the citrus industry. This is just a quick glimpse at our operating budget, which you will see that we operate well below our authority. But this is the preliminary budget we passed in June. Our crop forecast is actually higher than what we budgeted on. So if things go as well as we project, we will actually have more revenue in assessments this year, and we will continue to need that authority going forward. This is the allocation of our budget by function. You'll see a little bit more of the pie is towards research, and that really is in greening research. And then just to let you know, there are really incredible programs going on right now. About a month ago, I took a walk through a UF experimental grove in Eagle Lake, Florida. And they're all traditionally bred trees that are showing incredible resistance to citrus greening. Mother Nature takes time. There are things called juvenility, things that we don't know about until we find this great tree. But you can't just have the first tree and then propagate 100,000 others. You have to wait till it gets old enough to bear fruit and lose its thorns and do all of those things. We're seeing a lot of those research projects that we have funded in the past come to resolution now, and beautiful fruit, beautiful canopies, lots of fruit on the tree. They're healthy. We're harvesting them this year for fruit quality to make sure that they're actually things we'd want to make into juice. And for the first time in a very long time, our growers are talking about projects other than greening research projects. We're talking about grove architecture. We're talking about AI. We're talking about more effective methods of harvesting. It's a very exciting time to be part of the citrus industry. In the last 10 years, as you all know, has been not the most fun, and you have been incredibly supportive. I thank you very much on behalf of the Florida Citrus Commission for your support in previous years, and ask that you consider supporting us just a little bit more so we can get to that 10, 20, more than 20 million. My name is Shannon Shep again. I'm around these halls. My goal is to be the person that is accountable for the funding that we spend. I am present and accountable. If you ever need me, I'll be wherever you need me to be. We have great economic data that shows what our economic impact to the state is. We're a good investment, and we really appreciate your help.
I know the commissioner had good news. I think he mentioned that production had gone.
We're expecting, we had budgeted on 16.1 million boxes of oranges, and we're very pleasantly surprised when the crop forecast came out at 20.5 million boxes of oranges. Everything that I'm hearing in the field from our growers is that fruit is sizing up well, maturity is ahead of the game, fruit is staying on the tree, we haven't had a hurricane, we haven't had a freeze. It's one of the more optimistic seasons we've had in the last 5 years.
Where are we in terms of, I know we've lost a lot of land to citrus production, to development. Are we seeing citrus growers plant new lands?
Yes.
Have we tracked that?
Yes. As a matter of fact, there's an awful lot of grapefruit replanting going on in Indian River. If you were to drive down 27 or 17 or 64 that goes across the state, you'd see a bunch of little trees with little white bags on them, tree defenders. And there's a lot more replanting going on than there once was. Let's just put it that way. The issue right now we have is we did have a hurricane last year. And Ian took out a lot of the operating capital our growers had without any federal replacement. So there have been no federal recovery program replacement plans. So there's nothing to go back and actually order those new trees to put them in the ground if you lost those trees. A lot of people stood some trees back up. A lot of people just tried to take care of the ones that they had. The issue that we have there is impacts our nursery growers, because that means there's not any new orders for trees coming in for our nursery growers. So we need to sustain them moving forward while we are getting these genetically bred and technologically bred trees into production.
Okay. Thank you so much. I don't think we have any other questions. Appreciate you being here, and hopefully those numbers will continue to rise.
Thank you for your time.
Go up.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Well, I think that concludes this committee meeting. And if there's no further business, Representative Killebrew moves that we rise. Without opposition, meeting is adjourned.